Ride with you more often. What else don't you pay for when you're king?
Sither, I'm not king.
Don't tell the cabbie that.
Thank you for your custom. Please use robocabs again.
All retired public servants get the same allowance.
Why are you teasing, Grandpa? And don't mind people staring. Though it's very rude. What?
The city. It's so different.
See what you miss? Holed up for years on your own? That's the new public swimming pool, if you fancy a dip.
I'm not here for fun.
Right. You've got to rush back to your sulking.
Sither. You said this was urgent.
Fine. The doctor's just down here.
That thing is not the doctor.
Well, he's down here anyway. Perfectly safe. Doctor, I brought a friend.
No, really, I'm trying to work.
I said he'd be pleased to see you.
Ah, that must be Sither. And who have you got with you?
It's me.
Well, that's no help. You have to step up to my optical scope. So, come along now.
Do you know who I am?
The first time we met, Stephen Taylor, you didn't think I was real.
You're not him. You're a copy of his mind in a jar.
My boy, I don't dispute that fact. But a man is the sum of his memories, isn't he? As I have his memories, I must approximate to the man.
Approximate? An imperfect copy?
We're none of us perfect. But you're not here to debate the nature of my existence. You made up your mind a long time ago, so what brings you to see me?
You're standing for election.
I've not made any decision. But a number of people have honoured me with the opinion...
You're not even a citizen.
Then you've nothing to worry about, have you?
Nothing in the rules says you need to be a citizen. Anyone can stand.
And who was it brought in the rules?
People won't vote for a machine.
Then I say it again. You've nothing to worry about. Really? All this fuss.
You have to understand, the doctor is popular. He helps people, answers their questions.
I have direct access to the city's information systems.
The systems were destroyed. We can't view all of history.
Thanks to you and the doctor, the real one.
We still have the history of the people since the day you became king. Plus, I have my memories.
Your memories aren't perfect. We found that out before.
They don't need to be. People want someone to listen.
I do more than listen. I offer practical advice.
You're selflessly devoted to their interests.
He never asks for anything. Why are you so against him? He's your friend.
You didn't know the doctor. That's not him.
You said he was dangerous. If you want to stop him being elected, you need to convince me.
He can't admit his prejudice. He finds my condition uncanny.
It's not that. There was a time when I travelled with the doctor, the real doctor.
Another of your stories.
You used to like hearing them. This one illustrates a point. We were locked out of the TARDIS.
Ah, I remember it well. London, 1762.
Then you don't object if I tell her what happened?
I can't see what good it will do you, but no.
Well then. I'd been to London before, in 1912, But 150 years before that, the only landmark I recognised was the great dome of the cathedral. Here it dominated the skyline, looming over narrow, busy streets. It was midsummer and hot. A haze of muck shimmered in the air. Then there were the Londoners, 700,000 unwashed bodies, all in close proximity.
"It stinks,"
said Vicky, holding her nose.
"Of course, child. The sewers are yet to be built. Many of these people think bathing to be dangerous. But we mustn't judge."
Vicky wouldn't be put off.
"We could catch one of those diseases they used to have, like cancer."
"I thought you had a certificate in medicine. You'll be perfectly safe if you don't touch anything, or eat anything,
or say another word." Vicky fumed.
"You're teasing me. I'd never dream of it. Now, come along. This way."
We followed after him. The truth was, we knew he was worried. We'd landed in an ornamental garden bordered by elegant buildings that had seen better days. The fountain at the centre was no longer in use. There was litter everywhere.
"Leicester Square, if I'm not mistaken. We're in London."
It was early morning, which meant no one was around to see us arrive. But already it was hot, the sun blazing from a cloudless sky. Vicky worried that we should find cover, but the doctor spotted a fragment of newsprint.
1762. So the ozone layer is still there.
He made a show of basking in the sunshine, slipping off his coat and tossing it back inside the ship. The door clicked shut. Vicky laughed.
"I hope the key wasn't in your coat."
The TARDIS had a complex lock that would melt if it was tampered with. The doctor had designed it himself.
All right, I can't open the door, at least not without assistance."
But the old fox was grinning.
"In 1762, that means only one man."
The Pennsylvania coffee shop was packed full of people, all caught up in fierce conversation. Some were well-dressed in bright colours. In all the muck of the city, that colour meant time and expense. Others were of lower class. Yet they sat with the rich men, conversing as equals in the wood-panelled snugs. That was clearly the appeal of the place. The doctor pushed his way through to the back of the shop and took the last remaining chair at a table. Vicky and I joined him, standing to one side. Around the table sat several men and a woman. The doctor ignored them, his eyes fixed on the man at the end of the table.
"Good afternoon. I'm pleased to make your acquaintance."
He addressed a plainly garbed figure in a careworn coat. His long, thinning hair was swept back untidily. He blinked at the doctor through round spectacles. My first impression was of humility. That vanished the moment he spoke. "Benjamin Franklin, at your service."
"Did he really speak like that?"
"More or less.
The American accent was not so nearly pronounced. The two countries were closely entwined."
"Well, I suppose your impression of Franklin would be 1,000 times better."
"I'm an excellent mimic. Though I've no wish to intrude on your story."
"Please go on, Grandpa. What happened next?"
"The doctor made a mistake." "I assume, Doctor, you're a student of natural philosophy."
"Indeed. Indeed. What man of any value is not?"
He noticed the woman sat beside Franklin.
"Or woman, of course. Yes, we should compare notes on experiments sometime. That might prove very interesting, but that's not why I'm here. Dr. Franklin, I gather you have need of my services."
Franklin laughed.
"I'm in the best of health, sir. I walk. I swim. I bathe myself in the air."
"Oh, very commendable. But I'm not a doctor of medicine. You're engaged in a legal proceeding. That's why you're presently in England."
The others at the table had clearly heard Franklin on the subject many times. their response embarrassing.
In short, I'm charged to petition the king about proprietary claims over certain colonial lands.
The Penn family think they're exempt from taxes everyone else has to pay.
The law says that they are.
Well, we shall see about that.
Franklin sat back in his seat, a shrewd smile on his face.
How much will this service of yours cost?
My dear sir, I ask no fee at all. The very idea.
Franklin looked up at me and Vicky.
The doctor's right. We only want to help.
The doctor glared at me for speaking. Franklin only laughed.
You're too good to be true.
I don't blame you for being wary. You have enemies and I could be almost anyone, so let me reassure you. Our expenses have been taken care of.
Franklin regarded him shrewdly.
Someone is paying you to help me?
Well, of course.
Vicky had to look away so as not to laugh at the doctor's audacity. Franklin nodded.
I would like to know who.
Well, my benefactor wishes to remain anonymous.
Franklin turned to the others at the table.
It must be a trick. The Penns sent this fellow as a spy. I mean, who in England, with money, would support my cause?
I never said my employer was in England. You have friends, indeed family, across the sea.
Franklin whipped round to stare at the doctor. The doctor smiled easily back at him, delighted by his own cunning. But Franklin glanced at his companions and then rose quickly from his seat. He pushed past me and round the other tables and rushed out of the door.
We can't afford to lose him.
We emerged into the narrow lane and hurried after Franklin.
Dr. Franklin! We can't let him out of our sight.
I struggled to get past the people in my way. At the end of the lane, Franklin raised an arm, summoning a carriage.
Please! Dr. Franklin! We're friends! Colleagues! Scientists!
Franklin seemed not to hear. We watched him climb up beside the driver of the carriage and issue a command. Then...
I don't understand.
Yeah, neither did we.
Why lie to him in the first place?
I suppose I should have told him all about the TARDIS.
I might have believed you.
I wouldn't have. And we needed him on our side. It was good tactics. Make him think we could do him a favour.
So what frightened him away?
Oh, really, young lady, you've been given all you need. It ought to be perfectly obvious.
I don't remember you working it out at the time.
Neither did you.
Vicky saw it straight away.
It's something to do with his friends and family. As soon as you said that, he ran away.
But that's perfectly evident, young lady.
Who had we found Franklin sitting with?
You didn't mention names. You hardly described them. Men of different social classes. And a woman.
Franklin was married, but his wife remained in America while he was in London. The woman we saw him with...
He thought you'd tell his friends and family back home that he was seeing this woman.
We didn't know he was seeing her.
You mean you didn't ask?
We went back to the coffee shop. She'd gone.
Something was going on. And instead of making him trust you, your clever lie scared him away. Serves you right.
Well, the theory was sound. I'd just not accounted for human behaviour.
So you lost your one way back into the TARDIS.
I thought we were done for. Even the doctor seemed beaten.
Me? Never. I remembered enough of my history to know about that coffee shop. And I remembered that Franklin's house in London would one day become a museum. I'd visited it a century or two in the future, just round the corner from Charing Cross Station.
Which hadn't been built in 1762, remember? That's why we got lost.
We found our way eventually.
We drank tea in the smart front room on the ground floor of his landlady's house. For all she let rooms in her house, Mrs. Stevenson was moderately wealthy, or took pride in appearing so. Again, Vicky and I let the doctor do the talking. He admired the marble surround of the fireplace and a picture of overfed sheep on the wall. The look on Franklin's face when he found us there. But the doctor had Mrs. Stevenson eating out of his hand. Franklin, looking daggers at him, consented to join us for tea.
I owe you an apology, Dr. Franklin. Keen for your good favour, I implied a connection that does not wholly exist.
With Mrs. Stevenson watching, Franklin had to be civil.
Think nothing of it, Doctor. A misunderstanding.
We drank tea and made light conversation. Mrs. Stevenson talked with pride about her daughter, who she thought would be a great beauty. The doctor asked idly about Franklin's experiments. Mrs. Stevenson snorted. She clearly didn't approve. Franklin demurred to her.
Oh, there's really not much to speak of.
Oh, I'm sure it's more than that. We read your kite experiment with great interest, didn't we, Vicky?
Vicky was in the middle of a swig of tea and nearly choked. She tried to play along and nodded.
Proof that lightning is not fire in the sky, but composed of electrical force. Quite ingenious. Though I must say that the child suggested ways in which the experiment might be improved. Hmm?
Franklin glowered at Vicky. She smiled meekly back. I couldn't understand why the doctor had dropped her in it like that.
Well, girl, the next time there's a thunderstorm, we can put your ideas to the test.
That was clever. If you said you had thought of improvements...
Franklin would have listened politely. He might have conceded the point.
But Vicky was a child. He had to be indulgent.
He didn't have to be. It was a question of judging his character.
You mean I did so correctly?
Yes, all right. It was clever.
So Franklin redid his kite experiment, whatever that was.
Oh, you're getting ahead of yourself. We needed a storm. But the people of that time had no way of controlling the weather. They couldn't even predict when the next storm might come.
Oh.
The doctor seemed confident it wouldn't be long.
Of course not. After all, this was England.
We just had to wait. Mrs. Stevenson didn't have room for more guests, but she put in a word for us at a house in a nearby street.
It's not very spacious, is it? But I'm sure it will do.
The rooms were cheap, but had to be paid for, so I needed employment. I found a job as a boatman, rowing passengers back and forth across the wide, slow-moving Thames. I enjoyed that time on the water, in command of a craft. I worked long hours, often well into the night. But the only real challenge was passengers haggling over the fee. Some were generous with tips, so it more or less worked out. It felt good to be useful. Each night, I'd hand over what I'd earned to the doctor. He and Vicky spent each day at Franklin's, poring over documents that might help the legal case. Yes, the doctor meant to pay his way, too. Franklin had the whole first floor at Mrs. Stevenson's. It was light and airy. Three long windows reaching floor to ceiling looked out onto the street. A stove of Franklin's own invention sat in one corner. Each morning, Franklin rose early to make the most of the daylight. He was often out all day, leaving the doctor and Vicky to continue with their work. Franklin spent time in the coffee shop and frequented a number of libraries. He was also seeing his lady friend. When we'd known him some days and he thought he could trust us, we were introduced.
Doctor, Miss Vicky, Stephen, let me get you a coffee. The least I can do for your work. Sit yourselves down with Mrs. Holt.
She was a striking woman with locks of vibrant red hair. By the standards of the time, she was a beauty. Broad-hipped, a rosy complexion, and with most of her teeth.
Delighted, madam, I'm sure.
Pleasure to meet you too, Squire.
That accent! I knew at once she wasn't what she appeared.
I don't remember you saying so at the time.
Perhaps your memory isn't perfect.
Then what was she?
He's jumping ahead. When we met her, she was just Franklin's friend.
His girlfriend.
We didn't ask.
You didn't want an argument, because you needed Franklin.
You mean we used him? I suppose we did.
It was more than that. We met Franklin's son around then, too. William Franklin knew all about Abigail Holt. So what right had we to judge?
Vicky said William detested the woman.
Vicky tended to see things more in black and white.
But you couldn't get involved. You told me before about how you couldn't change history.
Well, it's not that we couldn't. We couldn't dare.
It's easier said than done. I mean, to keep things as they should be, you have to know what happened in the first place.
The doctor knew all about Franklin. Where to find him, where he lived.
And his role in the independence of the United States some years after we met him. It was vital. Nothing should alter that path.
But you'd never heard of Abigail Holt.
She's not mentioned in any book about Franklin I'd read.
Women often get left out of history.
Oh, you suppose it was patriarchal forces scrubbing her name from the records?
That happened, didn't it?
Not in this case. Abigail was good company. Smart and funny and good at stopping Franklin if he started to get pompous. He clearly adored her.
The man said he'd marry her if he could only contrive it.
That's when you first suspected her. Until then, you'd been taken in just like the rest of us.
I'd had my suspicions. That accent was a poor forgery. Her bearing, her complexion, her hands. The woman had been brought up in great comfort. But no, until Franklin spoke of marriage, I didn't think she posed any threat.
But then you thought she might change history.
She might have done anything. The issue was whether she meant to.
She was a time traveller. She'd got close to Franklin on purpose to change things.
We thought it was possible. We'd had experience of that kind of thing.
So you confronted her?
We had to be careful. We didn't know for certain what she was, and like you said, we didn't want an argument with Franklin.
So what did you do?
What could we do but watch and wait and hope she gave something away? The glass harmonica was another of Franklin's inventions. The doctor had been keen to study its working, so Franklin had had one carried up to our rooms. A stack of glass bowls in decreasing size were mounted horizontally on a spindle, which a foot pedal made spin. You simply touched the spinning edges of the bowls with wet fingers to produce different sounds. Abigail played the harmonica with easy grace. I arrived back at our rooms late one night after work to find her and Franklin there. As Abigail played, the doctor and Franklin worked at a table on sticks and a great length of string. Vicky dozed in a chair by the fire. Franklin made room for me at the table and fetched some broth from the pot over the fire. Thank you. What are you making?
I'd have thought that was obvious. A flying machine.
Well, this lot will never carry a man. The doctor looked appalled by what I'd said, but Franklin laughed. That's an experiment for another day. This only has to lift itself into the sky. He finished tying two thin strips of wood so they made a cross. With a flourish, the doctor extracted the silk handkerchief from his top pocket and passed it over. Franklin fixed the ends of the cross to the corners of the handkerchief so that it made a kite.
We use silk as paper tears in the rain.
I helped Franklin work on the kite, adding a tail, loop and string. Abigail continued to play the harmonica and the doctor made idle conversation. I kept silent, knowing full well that the doctor had something planned.
Then you think the French will wage another war?
I think the American colonies remain under threat for as long as they remain divided.
So they should combine as one nation. I can't see you convincing any one of them of that.
No, but there might be a great council. Each colony would send a representative. There'd be a president appointed by the king. Decisions could be taken for the colonies as a whole. I suggested this plan for a union at the Albany Congress.
And what happened?
They thought any such president would have too much power, so they turned the proposal down. I think we're there.
He took the finished kite from me and scrutinized my work. I glanced at the doctor, who was looking over my shoulder at Abigail. Of course, as he'd spoken to Franklin, he'd been watching her reactions. Oblivious to this, Franklin seemed pleased with my work. He took a piece of wire, about 30 centimetres long and with a pointed end, and fastened it to the kite.
Ah, I see. A lightning rod.
Exactly, my boy. We fly the kite in a thunderstorm, lightning strikes it, and the electrical charge is conducted down a twine, where it will meet this.
He held up what he'd been making while Franklin and I worked on the kite. It looked like a key attached to a crude electrical circuit,
Of course, I didn't say so. Electrical circuits had not yet been invented.
And what will that do?
Well, if it works, it will convert the electrical energy into another form.
But what form, Doctor? You still have to tell me what this experiment will achieve.
That, my dear sir, is part of the experiment. There must be no preconceptions. You will have to see.
With work on the kite completed, Franklin offered to escort Abigail home before returning to his own lodgings.
Yes, yes, sir. We'll see you on the morrow. Good night. Safely home. Sleep tight.
Well, what did you learn?
My boy, you should have seen the woman's face. Her eyes lit up when Franklin mentioned the Union, the President. Yet America will have no such things for a decade.
So she is from the future.
And means to interfere. Well, we shall see about that.
Then one day, the rain came. A summer storm. I abandoned my boat and ran to our lodgings to collect the doctor and Vicky, but they'd already gone. I ran to Leicester Square. There was no one about because of the pelting rain. The TARDIS stood where we'd left it, rain spattering its roof, and the doctor as he fitted his device to the lock.
I hope you're not going without me.
Help Vicky with the twine. We mustn't lose a moment.
Where's Franklin? I thought we needed him.
Only to remind me of the principles of the experiment.
Oh, I see. You just wanted to meet the great man of history.
And why not? He's a fascinating figure. You could learn a great deal from him, if only you paid attention. But we can't let Franklin see inside the ship. Imagine what that might lead to.
You should have thought of that before. Look, Franklin and Abigail stood with Vicky, helping untangle the twine. Abigail wore a hood, but Franklin seemed not to mind the rain.
They must have followed you, Stephen. Doesn't matter now. Get them away from the ship. We can't delay the experiment. Who knows when there'll be another storm?
So I joined the others, thinking up a lie.
We need more wire for the experiment. A lot more, says the doctor. Everything at our lodging.
Vicky caught on quick.
That's a lot of wire.
We'll need all of us to carry it.
Abigail seemed about to argue, then nodded. Franklin, though, couldn't take his eyes from the TARDIS and the doctor's device fitted to the door.
You go. I'll help the doctor here.
That's not what he said.
Doctor, you're not getting rid of me.
What? The very idea. Of course not. Stephen, take the others with you. Mr. Franklin can assist me.
His eyes glittered with mischief, already planning some way to distract Franklin when the moment came. But then...
There's no time to lose. You must run.
So we ran. Me, Vicky, and Abigail. At the corner of the square, I turned back to see the doctor and Franklin feed the kite gingerly into the sky. The wind caught it and threatened to tear it from them. There was nothing I could do. We ran on. I tried to plan what I'd tell Abigail when we reached our lodging, and there was no heap of wire. Vicky stopped dead in her tracks, and I almost ran right into her. She stared back the way we'd come.
That was an explosion.
They could have been injured.
Abigail, wait. Let me. But she didn't heed me. Vicky and I chased after her back to Leicester Square. The burning kite fluttered in the air and began to fall. Flames prickled the string leading down to the TARDIS. The doctor's device was still attached to the door. It was charred and smoking.
Where are they? Where are the doctor and Franklin?
The fire in the sky. It consumed them.
Of course, the doctor wasn't disintegrated.
No, but I was hit by lightning. We both were.
You conducted the full charge of the lightning strike straight into your device. It couldn't take the impact.
We were caught in the explosion. I tried to shield Franklin from the brunt of the blast. It's a wonder I wasn't killed.
But you weren't.
Because I had my wits about me. The device was destroyed, but it opened the door of the TARDIS. And my ship, I was more than merely its pilot. There was a link between us. She would heal me if she could. So I pushed my way inside, then worked the control on the console to lock the door behind me. Then I lost consciousness.
And Franklin?
Before I closed the door, he had followed me inside.
But this is a very wonder. Doctor, this will change everything.
Benjamin Franklin take control of a time machine.
The doctor was wounded in the explosion. He wasn't thinking straight.
Oh, wasn't I? Locking Franklin in the ship seems perfectly logical to me.
But you're not the doctor, just a crude copy of his mind in a jar.
You keep reminding me of that, but I readily accept it.
How was it logical? Franklin could have changed history. You wanted to prevent that.
I meant to limit the damage. What would have happened if Franklin and I had stayed outside in the rain?
We would have found you, Franklin and him.
And then what? The doctor was barely conscious.
So we would have focused on that. Got him away out of the rain, somewhere he could recover.
Ah, very good. Leaving the TARDIS unlocked.
I could have stood guard.
That would have attracted attention. Abigail and Franklin would have wanted to know why the experiment went wrong. And what the doctor had been up to in the first place. You couldn't have kept them away.
Maybe not.
I couldn't allow that woman access to the ship. If she was a time traveller, that would spell disaster.
That does make sense. Better to lock Franklin inside than let both of them in.
Yeah, all right. But at the time, we didn't know what had happened. As far as we could tell, the TARDIS was still locked. The doctor's device was still in the door in pieces. And the doctor and Franklin had simply disappeared.
So what did you do?
I still don't see what you hope to elucidate by sharing this story.
You wouldn't. The real doctor would.
Oh, well, then you'd best continue.
Doctor? Doctor! There was no answer, though he might not have heard me through the lashing rain. There was no reason for concern, I thought. Smoke curled from the doctor's device in the lock of the door of the TARDIS. I tried the door while Abigail was looking the other way. So, the experiment had failed. I assumed the doctor had thought of some way to get Franklin away from the ship. We'd catch up with him sooner or later. But when I turned to Vicky, she looked horror-stricken and not about the doctor. Abigail Holt was reaching out a hand to the TARDIS. As her fingers touched the panel beside the doctor's device, her eyes lit up in wonder.
It's got electric charge.
I didn't know what to say, but Vicky was quick to respond. The experiment must have gone wrong.
This wasn't what he wanted.
Vicky shrugged. That box is nothing to do with us. It was just something to tie the kite to. I wouldn't touch it. It might be dangerous.
Don't worry. The doctor and Benjamin haven't been burnt to a crisp. We'd have smelled it if they had.
Vicky stared at her in surprise. Abigail tried the door of the TARDIS.
Locked, so they can't be inside.
Perhaps they've gone for supplies. The doctor will want to remount the experiment while there's a storm.
There's no lightning now. The kite could have taken it all out of the sky.
Is that possible?
That's why we experiment, isn't it? To find out.
She turned back to the TARDIS. I glanced at Vicky, who thought for a moment, then sneezed. But we can't stay out in this rain. Vicky saw what I was trying to do.
Yes, and the Doctor and Mr. Franklin might have gone back to our rooms.
We'd have seen them.
They might have gone another way. Come on, we're doing no good here. It's not as if something can have happened to them.
I'd meant to reassure her, but Abigail glared round at the empty square as if somewhere in the rain lurked any number of villains. She saw me notice and met me with a thin smile.
All right. We'll try your lodgings first.
We stood in the hallway, sopping wet. Vicky grinned sheepishly at me and brushed the lank fringe out of her eyes. Abigail, though, gazed up at the staircase leading to our rooms.
Benjamin? Doctor?
There was no answer. I'll go up and check. You two stay here.
Not likely.
We could hear nothing from the upstairs landing, nothing from our room. Abigail fumed, but I went first. The door of our rooms was open. I tried to remember if we'd closed it. I don't know why my heart was beating fast. Abigail had spooked me into almost believing there had been some calamity. Doctor? There's no one here. No sign of them.
Leave off. Someone's been here.
She bustled past me to get a proper look at the room. Vicky and I looked round too, trying to spot whatever clue she'd seized on. But the room looked exactly as we'd left it.
Isn't it obvious? Where's all the wire?
I'd forgotten our earlier lie, but Vicky was quicker off the mark. The Doctor and Franklin must have come for it.
Oh, we'd have passed them coming back. And how much wire was here? You said more than two people could carry.
Vicky's eyes were wide. Then we must have been burgled. I didn't think another lie would help us, but what could we do? We spent some time searching the rooms to see what else might have been taken.
Look.
I took the purse from her. It was everything I'd saved from working on the river. There hadn't seemed much point in taking it with us if we got back into the TARDIS, so I'd left it for our landlady to find.
Burglars who steal wire but don't touch the cash. They ain't forced the door either, and Benjamin and your friend have gone and disappeared.
Who do you think it was? Does Franklin have any enemies? She didn't answer. I could see the conflict burning inside her. She truly cared for Franklin, but she also clearly knew of those who wished him harm. What had the Doctor got us all caught up in? Please, we want to help. The Doctor's our friend.
There's someone I can speak to. Meantime, you go round to Craven Street, see if Benjamin's there.
Vicky objected. We should stay together.
I ain't welcome there. Mr. Franklin's fancy landlady doesn't approve. So, I'll meet you back here in a bit.
I'll leave a note for the Doctor, just in case. As I wrote, Abigail made for the door. Vicky tried to stop her, but Abigail was gone. So Vicky turned on me.
You could
let her go. It seems to be somewhere important. We'll leave it a minute, then follow her. The Doctor woke in the TARDIS.
Wait a minute, how do you know? You weren't there.
The Doctor told me later.
Well, perhaps he should tell this bit.
I take it you mean me?
I suppose you could tell it from your point of view.
Oh, that's very good of you, but I've no wish to intrude. This is your interpretation of events.
You mean you don't agree with Grandpa's version?
Oh, not as such. The narrative style is melodramatic. There's no need to string it out. But the elements are broadly correct, and I'm keen to hear your conclusions as to what it all means.
Well then, I'll continue. If I get it wrong, do say so.
Oh, my boy, I will.
The Doctor woke in the TARDIS.
Eh? And what exactly do you think you are up to?
Franklin stood at the central tabletop of controls. His arms were extended over the levers and switches, but not as if he intended to operate them. No, it was more like someone warming their hands over a fire, as if Franklin could somehow absorb the radiant wonder of the TARDIS. The Doctor got unsteadily to his feet and joined Franklin. peering at the controls suspiciously, as if he'd never laid eyes on them before.
I dare say we shouldn't touch anything. It's probably witchcraft, or worse.
Franklin nodded.
For aught we know, we could destroy ourselves, or be transported anywhere in creation.
My dear sir, you don't mean to say this room is some kind of vehicle?
Franklin considered the idea.
It seems to me that we are not where we were. The electrical energy must have moved us. An obvious conclusion is that this mechanism is some kind of lodestone drawing us here.
It's logical. I'll give you that. Yes, very logical. And quite ridiculous.
Franklin didn't smile.
I had an impression, in the moment of the charge, of passing through the door of the cabinet.
The doctor gazed back at him in horror.
Yes, you're right. Ridiculous. This room wouldn't fit inside that box. We must have been transported.
I thought you might have taken leave of your senses. So, where do you think we are?
Franklin considered.
A more credulous soul would wonder if we'd passed beyond the veil. But let us not rush to conclusions, especially those of a metaphysical nature.
The doctor allowed himself a smile. Franklin was truly quite something. But that made him dangerous.
Then what do you propose?
Again, Franklin looked round the TARDIS control room, scrutinising it for clues.
We investigate. We make sense of all we can. Then we push some of these levers and observe what takes place.
Vicky and I made our way through the rain. The cobbles were slick and treacherous, so we clung to one another for support. Carriages rattled by, splashing dank water at us. Ahead of us, on the opposite side of the street, Abigail hurried on without pausing. We made our way through the London streets, past terrace after terrace. There were few other people out in the downpour. If Abigail had glanced back, I'm sure she'd have seen us. But she didn't. She was in too much of a rush. Then suddenly, we lost her. I looked away for a moment, and then she wasn't there. Vicky gaped in wonder. She must have a transmat or something.
Then we'll never find her. But let's take a closer look.
We crossed the street and made our way cautiously to the point where we'd last seen Abigail. There was nothing special about that part of the street.
If it wasn't so wet, we'd smell the peppery taste of a transmat.
But Vicky ignored me, examining a door to one side. It was no different to any of the others we'd passed, firmly closed against the storm. Except, no, the stone cornice over the door provided a little shelter, not enough for a person to escape the rain. But the top part of the door had kept dry, except, we saw, for a handful of droplets, where the door had recently opened. I took Vicky's arm, leading her back to the next doorway down the street. We sheltered as best we could.
If there's a door at the back of this building, we've lost her.
A weary-looking horse came clattering towards us, pulling a two-wheeled hackney carriage. The driver sat up top, enveloped in the folds of a coat.
Carriage!
The lady had emerged from the door up the street, the one we'd just been examining. She was tall and elegant and was immaculately dressed in the latest style. The silk was hand-woven, the floral pattern hand-stitched, the wide hips quite absurd. She looked so grand, so imposing. I didn't recognise her at first.
10 New Street, Spring Gardens.
It was Abigail. We watched the carriage pull away with Abigail on board, or rather I did. Vicky was already hailing another carriage.
Where to, squire?
Follow that carriage. Our carriage had little suspension and the seats were hard and unyielding. As we made our way, Vicky couldn't believe what we'd just seen.
Abigail's a lady.
Or knows how to pass as one. It could be another disguise. We rode back the way we'd come by foot, heading towards the river. Then the carriage took a turning and we made our way towards Green Park, to smart new buildings that overlooked a garden with a fountain. Our coachman stopped some distance up the street, understanding that we didn't want to be seen by the carriage we'd followed. We watched Abigail, in all her finery, descend to the pavement and walk smartly to the front door of number 10.
A man in smart clothes, a butler, I think, opened the door and clearly recognised Abigail. He politely bowed and bid her enter. Vicky sighed. We don't even know whose house this is. From the top of the cab, the coachman laughed.
Ah, that's easy, ma'am. It's the home of Thomas Penn.
Thomas Penn? The doctor had said Franklin was locked in a legal dispute with the Penn family, and Abigail seemed to be on intimate terms with them. Franklin studied the controls of the TARDIS. He indicated a bank of switches.
I suggest we start here and work our way through the instruments in sequence, taking note of their operations.
The doctor nodded.
Yes, I do think that's logical, but should we not wait a little longer and see if anyone joins us?
Franklin smiled.
It seems to me we've waited long enough. Perhaps working the instruments will provoke a response.
Again, that's logical. Well, I can't stop you.
But without Franklin seeing, he adjusted a control on one side of the console. Franklin reached for the first of the levers. All the lights went out. We waited in the carriage, watching the house. The coachman was happy to wait so long as I paid him, and I had no other use for my earnings. Then the door opened and Abigail, dressed in her finery, marched primly out.
Carriage!
She'd spotted our carriage.
What you want to do, Squire?
I guess we pick her up. Are you going our way? We went back to our lodgings. Abigail didn't protest. She seemed exhausted. I couldn't tell if she'd been crying or it was just rain on her face. But Vicky seemed to see exactly what was going on. She was kind to Abigail, made her sit down and brought her a drink. Then she simply said, "You're in love with him."
"Yes."
"Does he know who you really are?"
"Do you think you could hide anything from Benjamin?"
"Did he know you were working for his enemies?"
"Yes."
She told us her real name, but I don't remember it. Abigail, that's how I think of her, was not from another time. She was an aristocrat, related to the king, and she had a husband. I asked why, if she wasn't happy in her marriage, she didn't simply walk away. She looked at me like I'd taken leave of my senses. Apparently, that wasn't done. Instead, she escaped in disguise and lived a second life, as ordinary Abigail Holt. She could go to the coffee houses and mix with people from all walks of life. And then she'd met Franklin. He'd seen through her immediately, but had kept her secret. They'd talked and shared ideas. It didn't matter that she was a woman. She was free to discuss life and politics and the latest experiments. But the Penn family had spies watching Franklin's every move, and one had recognised Abigail. She'd been presented with no option. She either spied on Franklin as well, or her husband would be told what she'd been up to.
"I informed Benjamin, and as always he was entirely practical. I would continue to see him, and he would supply me with items to report."
"You lied to the Penns?"
"I had no need to. Benjamin had nothing to hide. He may dress like a modest country farmer, but there's nobility in his veins."
She thought the Penns and the British establishment generally had made a mistake in their treatment of Franklin. She worried that ignoring his petition would only lead to conflict between Britain and her colonies.
"He could lose them altogether."
I think what she feared was that she would lose him. And now Franklin had disappeared. She assumed the Penns had done away with him somehow, but they had denied it. "Do you believe them?"
"They seem scared of the prospect. Benjamin is respected, whatever anyone thinks of the petition."
"Then what can have happened to Franklin and the doctor?" Vicky put her head in her hands. "They must have been burnt to a crisp after all."
"Burnt to a crisp? And no such thing."
"Doctor!"
We hurried to the door to find him struggling up the stairs, half dragging a dazed Franklin. Franklin had lost his round spectacles and his thinning hair all stood up on end. Abigail threw her arms round him. Franklin blinked at us in wonder as she held him tight.
Doctor, we surely can't just leave, Vicky agreed. Franklin saw inside the TARDIS.
And he can describe what he saw in some detail. It was quite a shock.
Oh, that's rather good.
You mean he thinks he imagined it because of being electrocuted?
It would be the logical explanation, wouldn't it? Now, where did I put that key?
He made a show of rooting through his pockets and pretending to be worried. Then, with a mischievous grin,
here we are.
Are you sure we haven't changed anything?
He's a practical fellow, not minded to believe in miracles. I should say it was very interesting to meet him. I'm glad we had the chance. That man is going to change history.
But Vicky wasn't satisfied.
What about Abigail? What will happen to her?
I don't know. Her part in what's to come is not recorded. But that was her choice, wasn't it? She doesn't want people to know she ever existed.
Vicky sighed.
It isn't very fair.
But she's had an influence, hasn't she? The way Franklin talks about the Penn family and the King, that's all come from her.
Vicky agreed. His son doesn't like her. That's going to end badly.
The doctor and I both turned to her in surprise.
What makes you think that?
Vicky rolled her eyes.
I don't think you two can have paid attention to anything that was going on.
I didn't understand. The doctor laughed at my confusion and turned to the controls.
And that's it. That's the story.
You didn't like it?
Well, yeah, it was fine. But I don't understand what it says about the doctor. I mean, this one here, and why you and him don't get on.
That thing isn't the doctor.
I accept I'm a copy. An imperfect copy. Really, I can't help what I am.
That's just it. You can't help yourself.
I don't understand.
The whole point of the story, all the hoops we had to jump through, it was so we didn't change anything. We couldn't get involved.
You mean the doctor, this copy of him, standing for election, is him breaking his own rule?
I haven't decided if I am standing for election.
And he has to do something. He's trapped in this jar. Why not try and help people?
Oh, that's what he's doing, is he?
Well, yes. Isn't it?
Tell me, Doctor, how did you feel about Abigail?
I don't see what you're driving at.
Answer the question, unless you have something to hide.
She was an interesting woman in many ways. Courageous, resourceful, carving her own path beyond the strict limits imposed on her by the time she lived in.
Then you agree with Vicky. It's not fair that Abigail was forgotten by history.
Fair? No. But life isn't fair. She was perfectly nice. I liked her, yes, but she wasn't important.
That's why he's not the doctor.
I didn't mean that. I meant she wasn't important in the broader context, the longer view of time.
It's a matter of perspective.
You see, your granddaughter understands.
Did Melp Enya understand?
I made a mistake.
Who's Melp Enya?
He was a technician working here. A good kid, his mother told me. Not the brightest or most beautiful, not a young man who was going to change history. A good kid, but no one important.
That's not why it was an accident.
What did it do to him?
You've nothing to hide, you tell her.
It was an experiment to see if this consciousness could be transferred beyond the limits of this jar.
You moved into someone else?
Briefly.
When I realized the error, I switched the process back immediately.
It was too late for Melp Enya. His brain was burnt away.
I very much regret...
This thing told the inquiry that Melp volunteered.
He did. I had a written testament.
He only volunteered because you didn't tell him the truth. I studied the experiment. You transferred your consciousness by overwriting his brain. If it had worked,
He would have died anyway. What was him would have gone. But then, he wasn't important.
Grandpa? Grandpa? Hey, what's all this in aid of?
With a bit of luck, an experiment.
You've lost your lovely view.
It was distracting. The point of having a cell was to be secluded.
So you're covering the walls and windows with... What is this stuff?
Lead.
It's quite grey. So what's the experiment?
Well, if I can make it work, I'll tell you. I hope you've brought enough lunch for the builders.
I didn't bring lunch. I came to talk.
Oh. About the thing that isn't the doctor.
It knows it did wrong. It still wants to play a role in the community.
It still wants to take charge.
I think it wants to make amends.
That's what it says.
I was thinking, you said your story was proof that it wasn't the doctor.
That thing would have simply killed Abigail, or put her out of the way. She didn't matter to history, so it's all right to get rid of her.
But what if the doctor's device hadn't worked? You couldn't get back into the TARDIS. What then?
I guess we'd have been stranded. But I had my job on the river. We'd have been all right.
And the doctor?
You mean he would have got involved eventually?
I mean, you don't know how he would react to being trapped. That brilliant mind of his and nowhere to go.
It killed someone.
I know.
What do you want me to do?
Come back to the city. Talk to people.
About what? About what it did? Sither, who have you told?
It's your fault. You said it couldn't stand for election and I had to convince them.
Who did you tell?
Everyone. Melpenia's death wasn't an accident. The doctor tried to escape from his jar.
And how did people respond?
People aren't all the same. Some were more angry than others. Mother says I've done a great service in exposing the truth. She's called for the death penalty. But no one seems sure how you'd kill the doctor, or if he's even alive. There's going to be an inquiry. I mean, not into killing him, but the whole case.
And the doctor?
There was an attack on the laboratory, but no one got inside. We've posted some guards.
How's he taken it?
I haven't been to see. I mean, how can I face him?
Because of what you've done.
I thought if you came too...
I think I've done enough. I've got my work here.
You're walling yourself away. We need you.
I don't want to be involved.
But you already are. You told me the story. Doctor? Doctor? Something must have happened.
Or he's sulking.
The very idea. If you must know, I was engaged in a complex calculation. And now you've made me lose my place.
If you'd rather we left.
As you hear, you might as well stay. Out of it. What do you want from me?
I came to say I'm sorry.
Well, that's hardly of any use now. Well, young man, I hope you're satisfied. I'm now a public enemy.
Because of what you did.
You'll remember I wanted it all out in the open at the time. The delay, the cover-up, that's what incriminates me now.
And the man you killed.
No, he's right. I made a mistake. Justice should be seen to be done.
Then why didn't you?
I thought people would react like this, that they'd want him turned off.
As I told Mother, we don't have the death penalty.
But you said, is he even alive?
Even you make the distinction. There are lives that are important, and those that don't count.
Stephen didn't. He saved you.
Oh, and I should be grateful. What did I get? Another decade or two in this wretched container. And then the truth comes out anyway.
You said you'd behave yourself. Help people search the systems. Answer their questions.
I listened to all their tawdry concerns, the banality of it. I think part of their anger now is that I know all their secrets. And how tedious their lives are.
They're not important.
Then you didn't want to stand for election.
It wasn't my idea. I resisted the suggestion. But the more I heard about the mess your mother and aunt have created... Well, even the incomplete memory of a man bubbling in a jar could do a better job. So I allowed myself to think I'd served my time for what I did. Because I'm a stupid old man.
You're not the only one.
Oh, I should thank you, my boy. You set me an example, shutting yourself away like you have done. I've made a decision. I'm going to transfer myself again.
What?
But this time, into the system. I'll become part of the data, and no longer a threat.
Can you do that?
It's a complex calculation which you interrupted.
But you'll die.
And no one seems sure if I'm alive anyway. It will just be exchanging one form of consciousness for another. I expect it will be very interesting, and it's a simple solution to the dilemma. I've always liked simple solutions.
Don't. Please.
Oh, I hope you're not going to be sentimental.
I'll stop you if I have to.
Can he harm the data?
I don't see how. This is just giving in.
We can't go on fighting forever. You came to the same conclusion. So?
Doctor?
Before I go, there's just one thing.
Doctor, please.
I'm not addressing this to you. Sidda, your mother and aunt, they need putting in their place. Use the fact that you told people about me and have dealt with me now. Be the strong leader the people so obviously want. But give them the leader they need.
You mean stand for election? Doctor.
Doctor? Doctor!
But he was gone. The technicians checked the systems. The jar no longer contained whatever had been there, and there was something in the data, a sequence of numbers, a new bit of information. Was it alive or aware of its existence? Had it ever been? How would we ever tell? But I did what it, the thing that wasn't the doctor, I did what it asked. I stood for election, and won. Grandpa went back to his cell and the experiment he was working on. And it worked, his experiment. To bring back the doctor. The real doctor. But that's another story. Yeah!